It turns out that in the 700 section of German football stadiums, people drink cheap beer, just like in the 700 sections of American football stadiums, people drink cheap beer. And this is one of the many things that I learned almost 20 years ago when I went to my first and only Bundesliga, that's the Premier League in Germany, soccer game. And it was quite an experience. It was a very cold March day, but there was so much raucous energy in that stadium and huge flags. And again, there I was in the nosebleed section, and the players were just these, you know, little sort of almost pins running around. But I quickly learned the two-line refrain we were supposed to sing for the team that was wearing white. And I think I learned a lot of colorful German phrases that day, just repeating what the people next to me were. And it turns out those were not things that my high school German class had reviewed, those particular words that day. So there we were, and I was totally an Ausländer. I was a foreigner. I was an American. But I knew the right songs, and I think a friend had even given me a shirt to wear, so I was welcomed into the HSV tribe that day. And there is something about sports that reminds us as humans of how strong our capacity is and how much we like to feel a part of a tribe, right? We like to have the hat and the jersey of our team, know the songs, know the players. And it feels good, again, to be part of a tribe. And generally, when it comes to sports, outside of South Philly, typically there's really no danger that erupts in us having these sort of sports tribal allegiances. But again, as humans, we're definitely tribal. We're programmed this way. My roommate my sophomore year was John Caffarelli. He was an Italian-American from Long Island. And one thing I learned was how important it was for him to claim that his mom's tomato sauce was better than his best friend Luigi's. This was really important, right? This was somehow part of his tribal identity, that you would be fiercely loyal to your mother's tomato sauce. And again, there's sort of all of these identities and sort of tribes that we have. And typically, especially in America, we sort of live and let live. And it's a little bit like, you know, my tribe is the rose and your tribe is the lilies, but we can kind of all be together here. But we know that this tribal capacity as humans, this instinct to sort of associate with others and also declare others to not be part of our tribe, has a far darker side, a far darker side. And what can happen and has happened again and again and again in human history is that we as humans make all sorts of tribes. And those tribes can be on religious fault lines, ethnic, language, food, you name it. We as humans have found a way to separate ourselves from other humans and have our tribes. But again, the problem isn't just that we have differences. The problem is when we begin to think that our tribe is the wheat and the other tribe is the weed. Again, the problem is that when we begin to think that our tribe is the wheat and the other tribe is the weed. Because once that happens, once we begin to assume that we're on the virtuous and good side of the tribe and others aren't, not just that they're different, but they're lesser, it doesn't take long to get to the question of this parable. When the workers of the field go to the master and say, "Should we pull up the weeds? Should we get rid of the weeds lest they hurt the wheat?" And this is so often the question that comes along in human history. Should we not pull up, pick out, eliminate, destroy the other, the weeds, the other tribe? And so you can call it what you will, ethnic cleansing, tribal warfare, inquisition. But this is our pattern as humans, to declare ourselves part of the wheat, declare others part of the weeds, and then to seek to eliminate them. And I wish I could say that this was a problem that only other times or other places have, but I fear it's come to our shores here. I fear it's come to our shores and to our society. I'm amazed at how tribal we've become in our outlook. And we just divide up the world into teams. Blue lives matter, black lives matter. Care about small businesses, care about keeping grandma safe. And we just sort of divide up into these tribes, complete with our symbols and our signs and our code words. And again, there always will be differences in opinions about how we have to move forward. That's fine. But we're moving from sort of op-eds in newspapers, we're moving to comments on social media to far more angry and even potentially violent ways of dealing with conflict. The last few weeks, there's been great agitation around monuments in our country. And what is particularly disturbing to me is that we're approaching this like tribes. And that what I see is angry mobs circling around monuments, or then vigilantes, armed vigilantes, seeking to defend them. We're not at a point now of discussing which monuments are obviously terrible relics of the past and need to come down. Which ones need to sort of be amended or edited? Which ones do we need to put up alongside to tell another side of history? We're not having a rational conversation. No, we're having a tribal conflict here. And we know that when this starts happening, it's not long afterwards until violence and bloodshed flow. My concern isn't really about monuments. That's really not a particularly passionate issue for me. But my concern is it's a symptom, I believe, of this tribalism that's infecting our nation right now. And that I fear sort of projects into a future of this continued behavior. So what do we say to this? Well, first I want to say that I believe that bad religion is religion that convinces us that we are on the side of the wheat and others are the weeds. Again, I believe that bad religion is what convinces us that we are the wheat and that others are the weeds. Where we go to whatever house of worship we go to week after week and only have our prejudices confirmed. And we continue to have that haunting sense that we've got it right, that we have virtue, and that others don't. My sense is that good religion, real faith, the discipleship that Jesus Christ has called us to, today we have a baptism, we've had baptisms all this month, the life of the baptized is one where we no longer imagine that we are simply the wheat and that others are the weeds. But rather we take seriously the fact that there's a weed inside of each one of us. The way that I look at this parable is that each of our hearts is a field, and that in each of our hearts is both wheat and weeds. That each of us have weeds in us, and that we discover as we move through life again and again, we think we sort of have made moral progress, but we recognize that there's something that sort of creeps and grows and infects our heart that brings us to anger, anxiety, to fear, to prejudice, to vanity, to lust, to lead us to be concerned about number one instead of our neighbor, to seek to conform God to our image rather than ourselves to God's. Jesus is quite adamant what to do with these weeds, and that is they must be put to death. That part of you and me, that weed inside of us that again and again produces pride and fear and greed and despair and anxiety, that's not going to live forever. And there's some really good news in that we know that this struggle we have against our sin will one day come to an end. And this is the work of Jesus Christ and his redemption of you and me. We're not kind of sort of bad. No, there's a weed in each of us that must be fundamentally dealt with. And it took the death of Jesus Christ to do so. But we're also wheat. We're not kind of sort of good. We're wheat. We're glistening in the sun. You see, each of us is beautifully and wonderfully made, as Scripture says, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. We're made of the stuff of supernovas, and each one of us is this complex system of millions of organisms and cells that are working together in harmony somehow to produce something greater than the sum of their parts. We're a creation of the God Most High. And God has chosen out of great love to send Jesus Christ and loves you enough, is gracious and merciful enough to die for you, that you would be with him forever. We're not just kind of sort of good. We're not a mixture of good and bad. We're wheat and we're wheat. And the wheat is precious in God's sight and will live eternally. When Luther talks about baptism, he says, what does baptism mean? But it means that each day, the old Adam, the old Eve, the wheat inside of us must be choked and put to death. And the new creation, the wheat, must be brought forth by the Spirit. Again, bad religion is that which convinces us that we're right, that we're virtuous, we've got it all, and God is on our side, and that the others can go to hell. Good religion, though. Good religion is where we have an encounter with the living Lord that convicts us of our own sins, yet unmistakably lets us know that we are loved and have infinite value in God's sight, and sets us on a journey then of cleansing and purification and holiness. Good religion, though, is also not simply which sends us to the hills to reflect on our sinfulness or God's love, but calls us into life, calls us to interact with our neighbors and deal with the issues that face our world, face our communities, face our society. And so the life of the baptized is also the life lived in this world facing today's issues. But as we do so, it's good to hold ourselves in check and always be conscious of the weeds and wheat inside of us, and likewise the wheat and weeds in the other, in the people on the other tribe. For when we do so, it opens us up in humility, in empathy and compassion to actually work together and try to bring about maybe not even the fullness of God's kingdom, but simply civil society. In the end, Jesus Christ has a goal. And that goal is that we would all be in one tribe, the tribe of the redeemed. The tribe of those who have been reconciled to our Creator. The tribe who can in one concord sing great praise. And in that tribe, there's only one who stands outside of it, and that is Jesus Christ, the perfect and only beloved who died for you and for me and for this world and for its sins and for its redemption. Amen.